The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
Good morning, class. It's Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks for Brad Sesmat. Happy Wednesday to you, and welcome to the Brad Sesmat Show. We got a number of things lined up, and people say all the time what a great time of year October is for sports, and boy, we got evidence of that today on the show because we have a number of different things to go over. Michael Fabiano will make his weekly visit. We'll talk fantasy football from Michael, of course, at the NFL Network and NFL.com. He's their fantasy editor. We'll visit with Doug Haller from AZCentral.com and the Arizona Republic. He follows ASU football. He's their beat writer, and we'll talk about the loss to Notre Dame on Saturday. And what really sets up to me, and Doug will talk about this, as a trap on Saturday night at Sun Devil Stadium against Colorado. And while the Devils know that the most important games are the ones within the conference and specifically in the Pac-12 South, this has all the makings of a very scary little setup here on Saturday. And we'll talk about that with Doug and a lot of other things. And we also have a number of other interesting topics to go over, and we'll do all that over the course of the time that we have here today on the Brad Sesmat Show, and we thank you for joining us. But first, as we do each day, we will start by talking about what's going on in the world of sports. And it's brought to you by Honda Resort and Casino, just 3 miles south of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. There's a sound I don't hear often enough when I visit Honda Casino and Resort because I just don't have the magic touch. The D-backs, and we'll talk about baseball playoffs here in a minute, but obviously the news made yesterday, the D-backs did finalize in terms of coaches who's staying and who's going as it relates to the coaching staff, with the news that Charles Nagy, pitching coach and first base and base running coach Steve Sachs, would not be retained. And the other thing that I thought was interesting out of yesterday's announcement was that the other coaches that are being retained, their roles are not specific. In other words, Alan Trammell is bench coach. Well, he's staying on, but he may not be the bench coach. Some of it may depend on who is available to fill coaching spots and what their strengths and weaknesses are. Now, Brad talked, or we had Pedro Gomez from ESPN on yesterday to talk a lot of things Diamondbacks. And the first thing we talked about with, or Pedro talked about yesterday, was just the moves in general that were made by the D-backs yesterday.
The Sachs one, not particularly. I had heard some rumblings that that one probably was going to happen. I heard that about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. But Nagy may be a little more surprising, only because I didn't hear that one. But of course, you know, the pitching, starting pitching in particular, didn't quite excel at the level that the Diamondbacks wanted it to. So we all know how it is. You don't fire the staff, you fire the boss in baseball, and that's what they did there with Charles.
It was surprising to me only in the sense that Steve Sachs had been there a year. If you remember, Sachs was brought into coaching. This was his first coaching job. He'd been involved in coaching at different levels, but not as a full-time major league coach. And Kevin Towers is very quick to point out, as you would expect, he said, we're not blaming these guys for our failures, but it's clear some upgrades need to be made. So I was surprised at the Sachs move. The Nagy move, Pedro's right. I mean, when you struggle in a certain area, the guy in charge of it is going to be held accountable. So very interesting. And again, I think the most interesting part was the part where they said the coaches that are being retained, their roles may change. So that just adds more intrigue to what is already going to be a very intriguing offseason. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the D-backs, after this time a year ago, saying we're going to get to more gritty baseball, we're going to grind out at bats, we're going to put the ball in play, it just did not work out the way they had hoped. And a team that did not have, outside of Paul Goldschmidt, a true power threat. And Pedro Gomez talked yesterday about whether or not a formula like that, that relies more on just making contact, can really work in this day and age in Major League Baseball.
Well, I think when you look at the clubs that have reached the postseason, you know, it's not unusual. The Tigers are probably one of the least athletic teams in baseball, and yet they won 92 games. They're sitting here in the playoffs. You know, a home run can erase a lot of mistakes. You look around and clubs really are looking to add pop to their lineup. They do believe that that is maybe the way to score runs. And when you look around, there's not a lot of clubs that scrap together, you know, 2-1, 3-1 type wins.
It, you know, what's interesting about that is there was a theory when baseball really started to crack down on performance-enhancing drugs that the power game was going to kind of go away and it was going to become more of a contact, move runners over, that kind of thing, because you wouldn't see the emphasis on power. But Pedro's right. I think if you look at this lineup, the real concern all year long was protection for Paul Goldschmidt. Where do you find a guy that can protect Goldschmidt in the batting order? Chavez did it for a brief period of time, but then he got hurt. And they really just never could come up with somebody that would be a nice right-handed complement. And in order to complement a guy like Goldschmidt, that hitter, too, has to be a power threat. Now, Kevin Towers has said, I want to go out and I want to try to find a power bat to add to this lineup. And Pedro Gomez yesterday on this show said that one guy that is being talked about is the Rangers' Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, Nelson Cruz hit 27 home runs and missed practically 2 months of the season. So, of course, he's an option. Kevin Towers is going to look at all his options, and if they want to add a power bat, that name certainly is going to come up in their internal meetings, no question.
True. But here's an interesting thing that comes up. Anytime that you talk, and the D-backs have been very open about this, they can't really go the free agent route. Have we seen enough of Matt Davidson to think this guy can do this on an everyday basis in the major leagues right now? And obviously, if you're going to get down to a choice between a proven major league slugger and an up-and-coming slugger, you're going to take the proven guy. And so if Nelson Cruz is a guy that was available, certainly the Diamondbacks are going to look at that. But I think there are two other things connected with that. Number one, there are other guys that fit that profile. There's a guy in Toronto, Edwin Encarnacion, who's been a 30-40 home run hitter the last couple of years and who has made no secret of it and demonstrated it in September that he loves hitting at Chase Field. He would be an interesting guy to look at. The other thing is whoever you bring in, there's a domino effect with the lineup. Let me just give you an example. Let's go back to Encarnacion for a second. He's third baseman. If he goes in and he plays third base, obviously that negates using Davidson there. It also forces Prado to move to the outfield. Now, all of a sudden, you're back to a glut in the outfield. You already have Parra, Ross, Eaton, and certainly Parra played well enough to where he didn't have to worry about being bumped again as he did after 2011. Ross, you don't know when he's going to be available coming off the hip injury, which complicates things somewhat. And That just adds to the intrigue with all of this. And A.J. Pollock. We didn't even mention A.J. Pollock, who certainly proved worthy of an everyday job at the major league level. So there's a lot of moving parts to this team. And the other thing about a trade, and I forewarn this to Diamondbacks fans, any team that they call, whether it's about, I heard a lot of talk again about Jeff Samardzija as a pitching pickup from the Cubs. Any team that Kevin Towers calls, you know what the first thing is they're going to say: Archie Bradley. And if you're trying to make a deal for a power bat, you better come to the table with something a little bit more than just this player, this bench player, this prospect. The most noteworthy prospect in the D-back system clearly is Archie Bradley. They have a glut at shortstop. They could probably throw a shortstop, a middle infielder into that deal. But it's going to be costly. And Kevin Towers is going to have to make a decision. You know, they had the two draft picks in 2011 in the first round, very high up. One of them was Trevor Bauer, and obviously that didn't work out the way anyone had hoped. Are you ready to throw Archie Bradley in a deal to go for it? This was an organization that back in 2000, out of 2007, and this was not on Kevin Towers' watch, of course, they had a tremendous prospect in Jared Parker, and they threw him into a package deal to get Dan Heron out of Oakland. So there's a lot of things that have to be considered, and Pedro's right. They're already talking about it. This is pros2preps.com, the Brad Sesmatch Show. Quickly, the baseball playoffs last night. The Tigers and Max Scherzer was just phenomenal coming out of the bullpen. I heard Curt Schilling in an interview yesterday say he couldn't understand why Freddie Gonzalez never got Craig Kimbrell into Game 4 in Los Angeles. When you're in an elimination game, you do what you have to do to win that game today, and then you worry about how you're going to set up your pitching when the next game comes along. And Jim Leland managed that way yesterday. Scherzer would have been a great pick for Game 5 in Oakland, but you can't get to Game 5 unless you win Game 4. So he uses Scherzer, who gets out of a bases-loaded, nobody-out jam, preserves the Tiger victory, and now Justin Verlander, who looked very much like the Justin Verlander that we're all accustomed to seeing in Game 2 on Saturday night in Oakland. Was it Saturday night? I've lost track of days. It was Saturday night. The bigger question is, who the A's going to start? And Bob Melvin won't tip his hand until later today. It'll come down to Bartolo Colon or that terrific youngster, Sonny Gray. And Boston eliminated Tampa Bay. We can talk more about it a little bit later on, but the Red Sox, pretty interesting story. When we come back, I want to talk about Todd Graham, but from a little bit different, just the X's and O's. There's a lingering problem with Todd Graham that we're all just going to have to deal with. And I'll tell you what it is when we come back on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
Like our Facebook fan page for the latest news from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/pros2preps.
Back on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Yes, I'm using a well-known national coffee to keep myself going today. I've never been big on energy drinks. Eric Sorensen, you drink energy drinks?
No.
I see those things for 5-hour energy or something, I'm sure they're wonderful products, but I always think heart attack.
Or jitters, or just like you can't get rid of the jitters.
Like I don't have enough jitters already?
Correct.
All right. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatch. And by the way, and I do want to get to this right away because I was supposed to do it the last segment, the Facebook question. Today is all about surprises. By the way, why are we all about surprises today?
Well, I just got to thinking, you know, the Cardinals are making their way through the season. They're 3-2.
Yes.
There have been some ups. There have been some downs, as is the case with every NFL season. So today's Facebook question is, the biggest surprise for the Cardinals through the first 5 games has been fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Head over to facebook.com/pros2preps. Like our page and share your input. For me, biggest surprise, Carson Palmer, not productive at all. 5 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And I understand, Jeff, the offensive line has had issues. You know, just replay the tape from the last few years. But Carson Palmer, 9 interceptions.
Yeah. And I will tell you this, and I don't get to see a lot of the Cardinals in September because I'm busy doing other things. Sunday was the first day I really watched extensively. That's not entertaining football by any stretch of the imagination.
Especially when you have the Broncos playing the Cowboys. And unless you have the ticket, you're not able to see that game. And this is no shot at the Cardinals. But you have to think, if you're local and you're sitting through that awful football game, the Cardinals and Panthers, and you're seeing the updates on the ticker of Manning versus Romo, this game's going back and forth, and you're subjected to an awful game in Glendale. I don't know if that's fair.
Well, and it goes back. I have the Red Zone. I don't have Sunday ticket. And I can kind of, you know, as the Red Zone does, just bounce back and forth between games. But I look at that team and I think, yeah, there is such a thing as winning ugly. And most times all fans concern themselves with is winning. But the way they're winning, it's kind of like, obviously, we'll find out an awful lot about this team this weekend when they go up to San Francisco. But anyway, that's the Facebook question. Biggest surprise for the Cardinals through the first 5 games has been fill in the blank. We will have Doug Haller from azcentral.com in the Arizona Republic. By the way, I thought that would clear my throat. I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. Oh, well. learn as you go. I would go into a speech about print media, and I'm not going to do it here because we don't have time. But I do want to point out, I always love it when people say print media is going away. Print media is not dying. Print media is not dying. It may not come in the form of a newspaper on your driveway in the next couple of years. But as long as there's great writing and great writers, print media will not die. It'll just be on the internet. All right, having gone on my soapbox about that, there is a very good writer with an internet service, yahoo.com, that by the name of Pat Forty. And I'm certain that that many of you who follow college football have heard of Pat Forte. He used to be at ESPN. Now he writes for Yahoo.com. Last week, in the first days after the Lane Kiffin dismissal, in Pat's weekly column called 40-Yard Dash, he did a jab at Todd Graham, the ASU coach. And basically it was a series of fictitious emails and tweets sent from, or text messages, sent from Todd Graham to Pat Hayden, the USC athletic director, in which Todd Graham supposedly said, this is my, you know, USC's my dream job. I know what I said at Arizona State, but I'd really like to be part of your program. And wouldn't we be great together in Southern California, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All completely tongue-in-cheek, all completely fictitious. It was funny. If you haven't read it, go online, Yahoo Sports, and read it. It's funny. Some people in Tempe did not find it funny. And listen, we're all, as Sun Devil fans, I'm a Sun Devil fan, if you are too, we're all going to have to get used to something for the next couple of years. Let me just say for the record, I'm extremely pleased with what Todd Graham has done to this point as a football coach. He inherited a mess. Dennis Erickson was not, he did what he normally does. He ran a program of guys that weren't following rules very closely. There was very little discipline. The inmates were running the asylum. And Todd Graham came in and immediately restored order. And I mean in a real hurry. And he got everybody to snap to attention, got in line. He has a very aggressive style offensively and defensively. Last year, they beat the U of A. They went to a bowl game and won it. So first year, great. This year, no complaints, even with the loss to Notre Dame and the loss to Stanford. And they played a very difficult start to their schedule, and I think they've come out of it fairly well. Colorado's a bit of a trap game. We'll talk about it with Doug Haller in a minute. But for people to get upset when a national media guy pokes fun at Todd Graham's vagabond existence as a coach, you've got to understand something. Todd Graham has this reputation. He was at Rice very briefly, left. He was at Tulsa very briefly, left. Pitt for 1 year. I'm sorry, as much as I like what Todd Graham has done for this school, and I hope he's here for a while, he is going to be the object of basically these kind of columns for the foreseeable future. I mean, remember last year, off a team that went to the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl, a rumor popped up that he was in the mix for the head coaching job at Tennessee. Now, this could be other schools recruiting against Todd Graham floating these rumors out. This could be Todd Graham's own people floating these things out. And yes, I know he did get a contract extension from ASU, but I hate to say this, but I will. It's pretty obvious Todd Graham does not concern himself with lengths of contracts. He has that reputation, and he's earned it. Now, he might fool us all. Not fool, that's not the right word, but he may just be right up to his word on this one and be it to Arizona State for a long time, and I hope he is. Win, lose, I'd rather he win, but I like the what he's done to clean up the mess. I like what he's done to embrace the tradition at Arizona State. I like what he's done to pay tribute to Pat Tillman, to Frank Cush, and to everybody else involved with ASU football. But people, you've got to understand this. He has a reputation. He earned that reputation through his coaching moves. And it's going to take a few years for people to get off his back about it. And you can't be so sensitive and get upset every time somebody writes, hey, Todd Graham's going to go there because that's his dream job. That's what he's done. It's not, I'm not upset with the column. I was surprised at people's reaction to it here. I mean, wake up, people. This is the reputation this man has earned. Now, 10 years from now, if he's still coaching at Arizona State, and again, for the record, I hope he is, that'll go away. You won't see those kind of columns and those kind of comments anymore. But for the time being, you have to accept the fact that this guy is going to be kidded about, made fun of, because of the fact that he has jumped from one job to the other. Think about Larry Brown. And for years, people would say Larry Brown will be at a place for a year, leave. And how did that happen? Because he has that reputation. I mean, he's at SMU now. How long do you think he's going to be there? Even in his 70s. If he finds another gig he wants to do, he's going to go do it. That's how these guys get these reputations. And again, I hope Todd's with Arizona State for a long, long time. All right, fantasy players, and I know a lot of you tweeted in questions. Your turn is coming up next. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com fantasy editor with this week's What to Do and What Not to Do in Fantasy Football. More on the way on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Pros to Preps. Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sesmat.
Back on this Wednesday on ProsToPreps.com, Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. We're joined, as we always are at this time each week, by NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy editor Michael Fabiano for discussions of fantasy football. And I must confess, Michael, as we begin, I do have a team in an NFL.com league. Because I'm a wimp and I don't like spending a lot of time. I'm not a real experienced fantasy player.
Glad to hear that you're playing on NFL.com, and I'm surprised it hasn't hooked you in just yet.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story, very quickly. I've done NFL.com leagues for years because they're free, number one, and number two, I can get in an automated draft, which works for me a lot better. But I'll tell you a funny, quick little story. I always name my team Haley's Comets after my daughter. And we have this, she and I have this agreement. I'm pretty much making, it's her team, but I'm making all the decisions.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, we joined a league that it was pretty clear that it was a group of guys in a fraternity at the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
We won the league. And and to those guys in that frat house in Minnesota, they thought, at the time, a 12-year-old girl whooped him. They had no idea that her 40-something father was behind the scenes, was the Wizard of Oz pushing the buttons. So
you were the ghost GM. We actually have a lot of those. We have several talent leagues here where the players play and the on-air talent plays, and a lot of those people also have the ghost GM. So you'll fit right in with that crowd.
Perfect. Well, before we get into specific questions, there may be a lot of people still that listen to these segments and don't play fantasy football. And we'll mention NFL.com because if you're a first-timer, it really is a great way to kind of just stick your toe in the water, so to speak, in terms of fantasy football because it is free, there's not a lot of pressure, and there's an awful lot of these leagues that are designed just for people to have fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And NFL.com is the most user-friendly fantasy football product on the World Wide Web. We just built our product. This was 3 years ago. We had played on another platform before. Now it's all NFL.com. It's the official game of the National Football League. And I'm not just telling you this because I work for the NFL. I've played in a lot of platforms. I've been in the business for 15 years. This one is the best one I've ever played on. And part of it is because it is extremely user-friendly. Another part of it is it's dependable, and that is very important. You always hear these horror stories of people who played on other sites and it crashed or the scoring doesn't work. That is not an issue with NFL.com. We have the best people in the business and, again, the best product in the business, and you can actually still draft a team. The time is running out to draft a team, but if you want to get in still, it's not too late. By the end of this week, you're still going to be able to draft a team and play fantasy on NFL.com, and I'm telling you right now, if you play now, you'll play forever.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com fantasy editor, joining us here on Pros to Preps. Let's get right into it, Michael. This is the time of the year that fantasy owners, we're a couple of weeks or a month plus a week into the season, and they shake up their lineup, perhaps, or they're thinking about making a deal with the waiver wire drying up. In general, what advice do you give people looking to make a trade?
Well, you always want to trade from strength to improve weakness. So, say, for example, you have four really good running backs, and you're lacking for a wide receiver. Well, you're only going to be able to start two or three of those running backs at any time based on starting two running backs and potentially a flex starter. So why not trade one of those running backs to a team that has wide receiver depth and help each other out? Another example I use is if you have two really good quarterbacks, which a lot of people have this year, because remember, Michael Vick was drafted late, and he's been pretty good until he got injured, of course. Phillip Rivers picked up off the waiver wire in most leagues. He's been very good. If you have depth, go ahead and make a trade. You don't need to have two star quarterbacks on your fantasy team. And I hate having a guy on the bench that is putting up big numbers, but I can't play him because I have a better option in my starting lineup. Don't put guys on your bench who can perform extremely well for another team, or you can make a deal to acquire a piece that you can add to your starting lineup. So grab that guy off your bench who's playing well, especially if he is on a very high note. It's a sell high definition there. And try to swing a deal with a team that may need help at the quarterback position, for example, in this scenario.
Speaking of the waiver wire, any guys out there this week worth taking a flyer on for a one-week starter to keep the rest of the year?
No doubt about it. You've got guys like Zach Stacy for the St. Louis Rams. It looks like he's the starter, at least for now. Alshon Jeffrey has been the highest scoring wide receiver in fantasy football over the last 2 weeks. You've got guys like Terrell Pryor, who I've been a big fan of, who has looked very good. Not somebody you start this week, but for depth, no doubt about that. Another player to pick up is Willis McGahee. Willis McGahee is a guy who had 26 carries last week. The Browns are utilizing him as their featured back. Justin Blackmon, this guy was off 4 weeks because of suspension, came back last week and had a big game, almost 20 fantasy points. He needs to be owned in all leagues across the board, NFL.com or otherwise. Keenan Allen in San Diego is another one who is starting to turn the corner and starting to see more targets there from Phillip Rivers. And you always want to play the matchups with defenses if you don't have an elite defense, such as the Bears or the Seahawks or the 49ers or something like that. So the Vikings is a good play this week. The Bengals is a good play this week, all based on the matchups.
Let's get to I'm finding I have questions of my own, but I know that we get questions coming into us from listeners, so we're going to let them kind of run things for now. Steven Surprise wants to know, what quarterback makes the most sense to start Monday night, Luck or Rivers?
Luck. This is a game of two very good fantasy quarterbacks, but the Chargers have given up more fantasy points to quarterbacks than any team in the National Football League. I love Luck this week. Start him.
Travis in Tempe has a question. With Julio Jones, I said Julio, that's great. With Julio Jones out, where do you rank Harry Douglas?
Well, they're off this week, so there's no ranking of any Falcons wide receivers, but I'm not 100% sold on him. He cannot replace Julio Jones. He just doesn't have that kind of talent. He's more of a slot receiver. To me, at best, he's going to be a third receiver, unless, of course, Roddy White is forced to miss time. And remember, he's been dealing with the high ankle sprain all year. Then he hurt his hamstring last week. If he can't come back for week 7, all of a sudden Harry Douglas is going to be the second option in the passing game behind Tony Gonzalez for Matt Ryan. Then we'll talk about Harry Douglas being a potential 3 in fantasy.
And there were stories today that Roddy White may miss some time. Tied into that, Mike and Gilbert acknowledges, yes, Atlanta's on a bye this week, but does it make sense to start a quarterback like Cutler instead of Matt Ryan with Jones being hurt from here on out?
This week, Cutler's a great start against the Giants. Their defense has just been awful in all aspects. So if you can pick up a Cutler this week, I would definitely advise it, especially if you have Ryan on a bye, or heck, if you have Colin Kaepernick, who has really struggled, and you're ready to put him on the bench this week. And the matchup against Arizona, it's not an easy one. So Cutler is a guy a lot of people are going to play, including myself, because of this matchup, and hope that the Thursday night curse, which seems to happen almost every week with players, the offenses don't put up huge numbers, doesn't come into effect, but I do like Cutler this week.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com fantasy editor with us on Pros to Preps. I have Kaepernick as my starter, and my backup is Bradford. Now, are you telling me go to Bradford?
No, not this week, not against the Texans. That's a tough one. The Texans are really good defensively at home, so I would stay away from that. I'd pick up another quarterback if you have someone out there like a Cutler, then I would do that. Otherwise, I think you have to roll with Kaepernick.
It's ironic because my backup was Josh Freeman. He gets let go. I just checked the waiver wire last week, and there's Bradford. I thought, okay, I'll get him. Sean in Anthem wants to know, he's in a 14-team PPR league, needs to start two. Here are his choices: Ryan Matthews, Andre Ellington, and Ben Tate.
Well, Ryan Matthews is coming off of a concussion, so you really have to keep tabs on what's going on with him. I don't even know if he's going to play. So if Matthews plays, he's going to be the guy. I'm not thrilled about the matchup or what Matthews has done. I would also start Ben Tate because the matchup is good against the Rams. Ellington's a guy who's coming on, though, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ellington suddenly takes Rashad Mendenhall's starting job. Maybe not this week, maybe not next week, but at some point during the season. He's shown some burst, and he's versatile. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. So Ellington's someone to stash. I would go Matthews and Tate, though, out of the three. Just keep tabs on Matthews because, again, he did have a concussion last week.
Phil in Phoenix asked, I need to start one, Josh Gordon or Hakeem Nicks this week?
Josh Gordon. I love this kid. And I know that Brandon Whedon's the quarterback there, and I would have liked this a lot more if Hoyer hadn't gotten hurt. But Gordon's a playmaker, and they're going to have to utilize him. They, of course, they traded away Trent Richardson. So this is a team that is going to be throwing the football, especially late. You would think they're going to be in some games here where they have to play some catch-up. So Gordon's a guy that I really like. I think he could be a top 15 wide receiver from here on out. He is that talented.
Bill and Mesa wants to know, are there any underrated defenses out there on the waiver wire worth grabbing with a favorable second half schedule?
You know what? I only look week to week, to be quite honest with you. So if we're talking about this week, you're talking about the Broncos have a great matchup. You're talking about the Bengals. The Vikings have a great matchup. The Texans have a great matchup. The way that I do things is I stream defenses week to week if I don't have an elite defense. But honestly, I haven't looked that far ahead where I can give you a definitive answer. Yes, this team has a great matchup down the stretch. This team has a great matchup down the stretch. To me, it's more about checking things week to week. And quite honestly, things change from week to week in the National Football League. Who would have thought the Kansas City Chiefs would be the highest scoring defense in fantasy this year? They've been great. Last year, they were one of the five worst. The defensive position is cyclical, and it changes all the time. So instead of looking ahead to a defense that may have good matchups later on in the season, you've got to play the matchups week to week here because, at least for me, I don't like having more than one defense on my roster at a time.
Michael Fabiano from NFL.com, NFL Network Fantasy Editor. We have just a couple minutes left. Tim in Peoria wants to know, which rookie running back has a bigger upside the rest of the year, Bell or Lacy?
I like Lacy only because I like the team around him better. Neither team has a great offensive line. Just ask Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers, who have been getting sacked constantly. I just think Lacy has more of an opportunity to score fantasy points on a regular basis. I do like Le'Veon Bell, though. I mean, this is really, really close. Bell is the guy who came out 2 weeks ago in London and had two touchdowns. The Steelers need to run the football. They don't have any other options. But Lacy also has proven that he's the guy. Last week, even though Jonathan Franklin was active, Lacy saw over 20 carries. He's clearly the man. He's the guy who's going to get goal line work as well. This is very close. But based on the offense around him and the fact that teams are not going to be able to stack the box against the Steelers, against the Packers as easily as they would against the Steelers, I'm going with Lacy. But again, it's close.
Jared in Scottsdale ask, if healthy, how long do I wait for Stephen Ridley to turn his season around?
Well, that's a big question that a lot of people are asking right now, and I've actually seen him dropped in a lot of leagues. Now, he is dealing with the knee. We're not certain, what's going on this week with him. I have him. I am holding on to him for now. We shall see. He was a guy you probably drafted in the second or third round at the very latest. I am not giving up on a player like that after 5 weeks. At some point in the mid part of the season, if Ridley is still doing nothing, then he's going to be subject to the waiver wire. But right now, I'm holding on to him. I still want to see what happens. He's still a very good back. The Patriots' offense has sort of been a mess. And until that offense becomes more of a cohesive unit, once Amendola, who is now back, is back in football shape, and Rob Gronkowski is back, and they have Shane Vereen back, that's when I want to see what this Patriots offense can do, including Stephen Ridley. But for now, I think you stash him on your bench.
Michael Fabiano, you can catch him on NFL Network. You can catch him on NFL.com. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care.
Always appreciate your input on fantasy football. And he's right. If you're a first-time fantasy player, if you've been thinking about doing it, NFL.com is a great place to go. No pressure, free leagues. There's nothing at stake except pride. And there's a lot of people in that category of novices at fantasy football. And you can get in a league with other people just for fun. And you can find out what all the fuss is about with fantasy football. We come back, Doug Haller of AZ Central and the ASU Insider with the Arizona Republic. They're going to serve Buffalo burgers at Sun Devil Stadium Saturday night. I smell a trap. We're back after this.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/prostopreps.
back on Pros to Preps on a Wednesday, middle of the work week, as the Devils get ready, the ASU Sun Devils get ready to face Colorado this weekend at Sun Devil Stadium. Thought we'd kind of take the temperature of Sun Devil Nation here for a few moments with Doug Haller of azcentral.com, the Arizona Republic, who covers the Devils on a daily basis. Like, the basic question, Doug, is what has been the mood the last couple of days coming out of that tough loss to Notre Dame?
Well, Todd Grant's been very upbeat. Now, he did want to win that game. It's on his home state of Texas. He had all kinds of family and friends there. It was against a big time opponent. He wanted to win that game. Obviously, he wants to win every game. But he was down a little bit after the game, especially, and on Sunday. But really, they've kind of turned the page. They, they've had that rough four-game stretch that everyone talked about with Wisconsin, USC, Stanford, and then Notre Dame. Todd said they learned a lot about their team over that stretch. He feels like they're in a pretty good place going forward. He feels like playing a schedule like that to open it, to open up the season, really is just going to do nothing but help them down the road. So, they still have their goals of winning the Pac-12 South title. That's still intact. That didn't change with the Notre Dame loss, so they feel good about that.
The physical nature, and it wasn't, I wouldn't characterize it necessarily as an overly physical football game, but how did the Devils come out of it physically?
Well, I thought you could tell. I mean, Todd thinks that was probably as physical as an offensive line. Almost, he almost puts them up on the level of Stanford. And really, I thought that Notre Dame's offensive line handled ASU's blitz about as well as I've seen anybody do so these last 2 years. Arizona State's defense isn't big. They're not a physical defense, so they have to rely on their explosion, their quickness, and I thought Notre Dame just really negated that, and that's something we haven't seen a whole lot of, because usually ASU's kind of use that their quickness to get around guys, but I thought Notre Dame handled it really well. Health-wise, they came out of it okay. It looks like Jackson Hood is going to be back this year, or this week. They've missed him for the last 2 weeks on that defensive line. It looks like he's practicing, and he'll be able to go, so... They got beat up, but at least they didn't lose anybody to injury.
Well, you make a great point. There were a number of instances, as you said, where the Devils utilized a blitz package and couldn't even get close. They never laid a hand on the quarterback. But it's more that Notre Dame is very reflective of Midwestern football, big physical, et cetera, et cetera. The way Arizona State stacks up defensively in terms of size is probably a lot better fit for the teams they're playing within the conference the rest of the way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is where ASU had a ton of success last year. And, really, that's what Todd Graham said this week at his weekly news conference. He said, we've gone through a tough stretch. We've played some of the best or biggest offensive lines that we're going to face this year. Looking at their opponents coming up, I don't know if they're going to face anybody with who's that big up front. I mean, Notre Dame's offensive line outweighed ASU's defensive line by 35 pounds. And that, that's not a little difference. That's a big difference. That's significant. So, really, I think ASU should get back to, what their defense is designed around, which is pressuring the quarterback this week. I think you should see Carl Bradford get loose a little bit. I think Will Fenton's going to get double-teamed all season, as we've seen so far. But I do think you'll see some other guys get in that backfield. We've seen Chris Young, the linebacker, he started a weak side linebacker to better stop the run. Now they're going to move him back to spur, where he was successful last year getting into the backfield. So, we should see a more active defense. If we don't, then I think, we might have to adjust our expectations for this team. But going forward, I think we will probably see them a little bit more active in the opponent's backfield.
Doug Haller of azcentral.com, the Arizona Republic, joining us for a few moments on Pros to Preps. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. Despite the loss, I look at Colorado, Doug, and I think trap game, only because Colorado is still working its way up to respectability, and the Devils have played a lot of emotional football games. Wisconsin, USC, Notre Dame. Are the coaches concerned about a potential letdown?
Well, I know if I'm Colorado, I'm telling my guys that, hey, this group just came off a tough four-game stretch. They think that they're just going to come back home and beat up on an opponent, take out their frustrations a little bit. I think by definition, this is pretty much, how you would go about defining a trap game. But, Colorado still, they've made great strides since last year. They really struggled last year. And, you know, with the new coach, Mike McIntyre, who did a great job at San Jose State, I feel like they're in a better position there than they were. You know, they're playing much better, at least discipline-wise. You know, I really think if ASU comes down here and it's flat, you know, I think they could probably get away with that and still get out a win. But I don't think we're going to see that. I think you're going to see a team that's coming back home. If it were on the road, I think there might be a little bit more cause for concern. But I feel like they're going to be ready to play.
Even as we're sitting here in mid-October, and there's a lot of important football games for Arizona State still to be played, but do you get the sense in some ways that they are kind of looking a little bit at November 23rd at the Rose Bowl already?
Well, the thing is, we put so much emphasis was on this this rough opening four-game stretch, and at the beginning, I think it kind of created this picture that once ASU got through it, things would kind of ease up. Well, as the season's unfolded, that hasn't been the case. All of a sudden, Washington's going to come in here. Washington's pretty good. You know, they come in here not this week, but next. You know, they just battled Stanford in a close game last weekend at Stanford. You know, they have a dynamic running back. You know, that game's going to be a little bit harder than what everybody thought. You know, going to Washington State, you know, that team's improved. And, you know, it's like, yeah, it's Washington State, but it's on Halloween. It's a Thursday night game up in Pullman. I think everybody can remember what happened last time ASU went to Pullman. It was pretty the game that pretty much ended Dennis Erickson's career. So, you know, I think that's a long ways off. And if they are thinking about that, they're going to be exposed because they have some teams. Oregon State comes in here. I think they have some teams that could really they're playing a lot better than what everyone thought earlier in the season.
Doug Haller joins us from azcentral.com and the Arizona Republic here on Pros to Preps. We've talked a lot about ASU coming out of the Notre Dame game. Did you get any feedback from people with Notre Dame, whether it was coaches or media, what their impressions of Arizona State was?
Well, they were impressed with, you know, they basically were saying that, you know, ASU had a variety of blitz packages, and they blitzed, I think the number that the Notre Dame coaches put out 85% of the time, and they just came from all different areas. And, you know, of course, they used that just to show how well Notre Dame did prepare and execute against that blitz. But, you know, I think you gain some national respect just the fact that even though Notre Dame's down a little bit, the ASU had its chance to beat them. But I think it's more of a lost opportunity, you know, just because, you know, Notre Dame, I mean, they're still not in the top 25. They, you know, going into that game, they'd only beaten one team with a winning record, which was Michigan State. You know, it just wasn't a team. It's not a team. It's not the Notre Dame team of last year. So I think, you know, they were impressed with ASU's pass rush a little bit, but even though they did just the way they attacked, I guess the quarterback. That's the main thing that I took out of it. But like I said, nationally, ASU had a chance to really, you know, at least show that they can compete on that level. And unfortunately for ASU fans, they just didn't take advantage of their opportunities.
Doug, I appreciate the time. Of all the writers in the sports department of the Republic, we saw most of them at Chase Field this year, but you must have been really busy because we never saw you once.
This was the first summer I never made it out there. Usually I'm out there for maybe 10 to 15 games between, you know, those summer months, you know, between June and July, those summer months when ASU football ties down. But we've had, you know, we had some guys who kind of stepped into that backup Diamondbacks role, and I didn't make it out there. There was a lot of ASU news going on with you know, the Notre Dame home-and-home series issue, and so I kept pretty busy with that stuff.
Well, I appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Doug Haller with azcentral.com, terrific writer, follows ASU football and men's basketball. ASU, by the way, will stage a basketball scrimmage Friday night over at Wells Fargo Arena that starts, I believe, at 7:30. Both the men and women will take the court for about 30 minutes. And the last time I did this show, I think, was the day we had Jermaine Marshall on the program. And I'm very excited to see what ASU men's basketball looks like. The women, too, obviously, since I broadcast their games. But it's going to be a really interesting year for ASU. I was just on a plane Monday to San Francisco, and I picked up a Lindy's basketball annual at the airport. And they did a lot of really nice things to say about ASU in terms of how they rank within the Pac-10, and the Carson Marshall backcourt could be among the best in the country. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad on this Wednesday. The other thing, I want to mention this very quickly. I saw a thing today, a tweet, and I'm almost certain this is accurate in the sense that I don't think this is a put-on, that ASU, and they've made it, you know, they're doing a lot of different marketing things this year. They've been a lot of fun. And in relation to the Colorado game on Saturday, somebody tweeted out that they're going to serve Buffalo burgers at Sun Devil Stadium. By the way, you can get Buffalo meat at Bash's or any of a lot of supermarkets, and it's very tasty. You know, Fuddruckers, the hamburger place, sells Buffalo burgers, and they're really good. So it's not out of the, you know, it's not a wacky idea to serve Buffalo burgers. But I just look at that game and I think, gosh, that's a trap. It's a trap. Colorado is struggling, and as Doug just mentioned, ASU's coming off some emotional football games. And even though certainly the conference games are very and very important, and Todd Graham has talked about this repeatedly, you could understand if there's a little bit of letdown Saturday night at Sun Devil Stadium. And I just hope that ASU is as a team is guarding against that and will have their focus right where it should be for that game on Saturday night at Sun Devil Stadium. And then also you consider the fact it's a sandwich kind of situation because you've got coming off of Notre Dame, the following week after Colorado is Washington, and all of a sudden that game looks a lot more important than it might have maybe back in early September. So there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about this game Saturday night at Sun Devil Stadium, which is Pac-12 Network on Saturday night. So it'll be very interesting to see what takes place between the Buttes in Tempe. By the way, I mentioned this very briefly earlier, and we're right up against a break, but I am one of those guys, I guess I'm old, because I like having a newspaper in my hand in the morning. And when I hear these people say, oh, print journalism is dying, well, maybe in a print form with ink and paper it is, but not on the internet. I mean, this website, prostopreps.com, a lot of great articles written by a lot of talented people about a lot of different things. And this time of year with baseball, I mean, if you go to a team website, take redsox.com, you can read about 6 or 7 different deep articles about last night's game in Tampa. And, yeah, I get it. You know, the Arizona Republic can't do that. It's the Arizona Republic. But that just, that, as I say, print journalism, writing is not dying. It's just going over to the internet. But as long as the Republic's around, could we please have a Sunday Notes column on baseball during the winter? Would that be too much to ask? I know. I'm not trying to beat up on the Republic or Mark Fowler, their editor. There's budgets to consider and there's space issues to consider. But, boy, I'd love to see a Sunday Notes column. Hey, when we come back, more on what's going on in the world of sports. We'll get you caught up on everything that's happening, give you my thoughts, and a lot more coming up. Brad Sesmatch, show on a Wednesday. Good to have you with us.